Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. Finding the right health insurance package is important, but with a wide range of plans available on the Irish market, it can be a daunting task when you don't know where to start. That's why for the next 4 weeks, I've teamed up with HCC, supported by Irish Life Health. HCC.ie compares multiple insurers to help you choose a health insurance plan that's right for you and your pocket. They can help you find a plan that delivers all-round mental health support with professionally trained counsellors to listen and give you considered and practical advice. And to get a free health insurance review, simply go to their website, hcc.ie. This week, I chat to the incredible Alana Sheehan, who goes by the Instagram handle @worth_fightingfor.
On a normal day, if I'm eating dinner, all I'm like, and this is an absolute gift, and I'm sure you have the same thing now. If I'm eating dinner, all I am thinking about is eating dinner. If I'm drinking, all I'm like drinking a glass of water, all I'm thinking about is this water.
Yeah.
If I'm out walking, I'm thinking about the fresh air. I am so present and so in the moment now. And on my bad days are the days that I just can't. My head is racing ahead. I'm thinking of Phoebe getting married, or I'm thinking of like Finn going to college. My bad days are the days that I can't be in the moment and my head is racing ahead. And I'm just like, I won't, like, even the chance of living longer than 2 years, 50% chance, like, that is better than what I thought. But then if I think about, like, my children are going to be 2, 6, and 7 or 8. And, like, that's not long enough.
Alana is married to Martin. They live in Tipperary and they've 3 kids. Finn, who's 5, Luca, who's 3, and Phoebe, who's 1 and has just started to walk. But last year, her world changed forever when she was diagnosed with a rare and aggressive type of brain cancer. In this conversation, you'll hear how tough it's been for her, having to have brain surgery, 30 days of radiation and 6 months of chemotherapy. But you'll also hear how grateful she is for her life and how she's really living every day with her family. I've wanted to talk to her for months now, and I'm so thankful that we made it happen this week. It's a powerful conversation, and it's one I'll never forget.
So we're recording this chat. It's the 15th of February. And when we were messaging each other back and forth, we had another date in mind, and then that didn't happen. And I suggested the 15th of February without actually knowing the significance of the day. And then later on, you told me that that was the day last year when, I suppose, everything changed. And we'll get to that during the conversation. But so let's start with you and Martin. You're together 16 years. And when I'm looking at posts that you put up on Instagram, I can just feel the bond that you guys share.
I'm with Martin since I was 17 and I'm 33 now. So I just don't know how I managed to pick such a good one at such a young age. Like, I'm really, really lucky it worked out, because it could have went so, so wrong.
Yeah. And did you know from the beginning that, you know, there was something good here?
Yeah. Like, I remember seeing him. Obviously, I wasn't out to find a husband. Like, I was still in secondary school.
Yeah.
But I just knew that there was something special about him. I didn't know what it was, but I just wanted him to be mine.
Yeah.
And turned out it worked out for me.
Yes, absolutely. So within a few years, you moved pretty quickly, really, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. He lived in South Tip and I lived in North Tip. It's not like other countries or anything. But obviously I wasn't driving at the time. So he'd come up and see me a few times every week.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it was possible, once I was finished school, I sound like such a child. But once I was finished school and then I was working full time, he was still working full time. And then we decided that we'd move in together. Like, we just knew that it was the right time for us. And I think we decided maybe on a Friday and then we ended up moving in somewhere on a Monday.
Okay.
But it just felt right. It wasn't like my parents weren't angry. His parents weren't angry. I think they just kind of knew it was the next step for us.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because we were so young.
Brilliant. But I suppose if you know, you know.
Yeah.
And some people meet each other later on in their lives. Some people meet early in their lives. And that's just been the path for you guys.
Yeah.
But you've been thrown a lot of challenges through the 16 years of being together. And obviously the past year is the biggest challenge you've been. And I say you both, because although you're, you know, going through the cancer experience, it's obviously affecting you guys as a family, both you, your husband and your kids. So it has that knock on effect. But even before then, you'd been faced with some ups and downs and challenges in terms of your house situation. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So as I said, me and Martin, we were like, since we've known each other, work was always very important to us. Like, our parents are very hardworking and it was always important that we worked and we worked hard. But we rented a few places. And then when I was pregnant with Finn, we were living in Limerick City and we moved out because we were in an apartment. And then the rent was just about to go up. My granddad moved to South Africa and his house became available for rent. So he said, you know, he would absolutely adore if we would move in, because he knew that we'd look after the house. And so he gave us cheap rent and it all worked out good. I didn't want to move there, but I was basically kicking and screaming. And we eventually moved in and never looked back since. So we moved into the house and everything was fine for a while. We were just paying our rent as normal. And then the house actually got repossessed by the banks while we were still living in it. At this stage, I had Finn and...
How old was he at this stage?
Finn was 1.5.
Okay.
And I had just had Luca. So we were there. We were so, like, once we did a little bit of work to the house, it just became home straight away. Like, even driving down the road, Martin felt like he was at home. I felt like I was at home. And everything was just, it was lovely. But the house got repossessed. And while we were in it, they were trying to, like, we watched them put up a for sale sign, even though we wanted to buy the house. But we didn't have a deposit together yet because it just happened so quickly. So we were really, really stressed. In the end, I ended up, I think my maternity leave with Luca was maybe 7 weeks or 7 or 8 weeks. And then I went back to work and I was working full time. So was Martin.
And you were working as a chef?
Yeah, working as a chef. And for us to work with children and childcare and stuff, we decided that Martin was going to work his normal Monday to Friday. And then I started working Thursday to Sunday. But Friday and Saturday were like 14-hour days. So I'd leave my children on a Thursday evening, say goodnight, and then I wouldn't see them again until Sunday morning.
Yeah, okay.
So, and like, our lives were completely parallel for about 2 years. So the only day we'd have together is Sunday at 3 o'clock onwards, because I was working the weekends, he was working during the week. And like, we got through it, but it was really, really tough. Like, as a relationship, as a mother, not seeing my children all the time, it was just stressful. And we just had to work as hard as we could, as much as we could, just to try and save enough for the deposit to get a mortgage and to buy the house.
It sounds like you were just running on adrenaline.
Yeah.
So just go.
Go nonstop. I mean, like, stress from the moment I woke up until going to sleep.
And would you feel that stress?
Yeah.
Okay.
Completely.
How did it manifest?
How did it affect me?
How did you feel in your body? Was it just a feeling like you were on edge?
Yeah, just completely on edge. And I mean, I wasn't, like, compared to now, how I look after myself. I was, like, when I look back, it was all essential at the time. Like, I had to do what I had to do. And we wouldn't have had the house if we didn't do that. But when I look back now, I just feel like crying for myself, because I was just so burnt out. Like, the two of us, we were so frail just from working so, so hard. Like, I'd go maybe 2 days without eating because, you know, I felt like I didn't have time. I was completely, just absolutely neglecting myself.
Okay.
And even, you know, at the weekends, Friday was a long day, Saturday was a long day. And when I came home, I would basically need to go to bed as quick as I could. And I'd have a bottle of Prosecco as quick as I could, and it helped me sleep. Mm. Like, I think all chefs do that anyway. But it just wasn't good. Like, there was no care, self-care at all.
And seeing the way you live your life now, when I watch your stories on Instagram, I mean, it's a whole new world. It's completely different. And I think a lot of people listening will connect with what you're saying. And perhaps, maybe, in the past year with COVID, people have slowed down or been forced to slow down. But certainly before then, you know, the fast-paced life, the having to go all the time and not giving yourself a second to actually check in and see, am I minding myself? Am I taking time out for me? But the fact that you were just at that level of it just sounds like it was so full on, you know, no, like not eating properly, not seeing the kids. God love you. And I get it, because you were trying to be the best partner and the best mother to your kids. You wanted to be able to provide them with a gorgeous home. But, you know, it depends on how you get there, I suppose, and the journey it took to actually achieve your goal.
Yeah. Like, obviously, in the end, it was all worth it. But I mean, I was heavily pregnant with Phoebe as well when, this was going on for about two years to save. But like, we didn't know we could have been kicked out. We had worked it out. They were going to have to give us 12 weeks notice if we were getting kicked out of the house. And at the time, like, it's hard to find somewhere else for rent. We couldn't have bought another property. But and while we were living there, like, people would come to have a look around the house to buy it. So it was just hardship. Like, I remember being heavily pregnant with Phoebe and just getting in the car and saying, I have to leave. I can't, like, show people around my home. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was on another level, just the stress of just basically they were going to sell the house from underneath us, you know?
I can't imagine the stress of that.
Yeah.
You know, when you're trying to rear your family and keep, you know, keep work going as well.
Yeah.
What happened?
So then we ended up applying for the mortgage. We had finally got enough money together.
Yeah.
And just like so proud of ourselves. Do you know, it was an absolute, people saved 10 years to get a house.
Sure.
And then we ended up going to auction on my birthday. And all of our birthdays are so significant as well. It's actually crazy. But and we had one bid against us and we bought the house. Wow. And it was just the happiest day. Like, I still hadn't given birth to Phoebe, but she was with us that day. And as soon as the hammer went down, like, I just started crying. And I'm pretty sure that everyone thought I was some sort of lunatic crying over this hole of a house. But it was everything to us. And we had finally, after such a long journey, it was ours.
Yes.
It was such a special, special day. And a birthday. I got a house for my birthday. How bad?
And what date was this?
The 25th of September.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in the November, on the 11th of the 11th, your little baby girl was born.
Yeah. And that day as well, while I was in labour, like, I had my oxygen up, and Martin's like, the sales after going through.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so it was just...
Wow, on the actual
Yeah,
day.
Like I'm actually getting goosebumps now thinking about it. And 11-11, I just, that's my numbers. I see them all the time. And Phoebe's birthday. And I think the sale price or something was 111. It was all just crazy.
Really?
Yeah, just really, really strange things happening.
Have you always found, a significance in numbers?
I did for about... While we were going through the stress of the house, I don't know if I was looking for some sort of... I was definitely looking for signs. Hmm. So I started seeing it then. But then when I had cancer, then when I found out I had cancer, I was like, this is such a load of crap. It didn't mean anything. But now I'm back on the 11-11 bandwagon again.
Okay. Yeah. And I can connect to that as well. Yeah. I think when something as big as cancer comes into your life, you... Not that you become cynical, but it's, you know, you don't look through life through the same lens.
Definitely not.
No. So you have your little baby girl in your arms.
Yeah.
And you have your house and life is good.
Yeah. I mean, I just felt like so complete, so happy. And even just the fact of, I remember one of my favourite days that I've ever had. This was the first time as well that Martin was actually able to take paternity leave. So before that, like I was at home. I had Finn and then I had Luca and I was on my own the next day, you know, because he couldn't take any time off work. But I just remember being up in bed with Phoebe and I was just thinking, I'm in my home with my girl and my husband just bought me up tea and toast. And I was just sitting there and I still remember the day and I was like, this is the life. I have made it. Like I just felt so happy, so content. And I just had everything that I wanted. Mm. Just really, really happy.
Yeah. But then fast forward a few short months.
Yeah, 3 months.
Yeah, things changed.
Yeah.
So Phoebe's christening was the first time that you had a seizure and you weren't even aware of it. And that was the 4th of January.
Yeah.
So what happened?
So we normally our babies, like we are in no rush for anything. And we christened the other two when they were nearly one. But because loads of my family were home for Christmas, I just decided, and I had my own christening gown and I wanted Phoebe to wear it. So I decided that we'll just do it when everyone's home and it'll be a lovely big family affair. So we decided to have the christening on the 4th and me and my mum are both chefs. So we prepared all the food. We always just go over the top. It's a joke. We're wrecked. Like we go to the church with wet hair because we've been getting all the food ready.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you know?
Yeah. So the spread was probably epic.
Yeah. But we looked rubbish. But anyway.
I'd say that was an impossibility looking at you.
But yeah, so I was just exhausted. I remember drinking a can of Red Bull on the way to the church. And I was feeling a bit of stress. I had some other family issues, say, around Christmas as well. So I did have a bit of extra stress on my plate. But I wasn't prepared for that at all. So I went to bed that night. We had a lovely day. And I went to bed that night. And Martin woke me up in the middle of the night. And I actually don't know what he said in the middle of the night. But then the next morning... he woke me up and he said, Alana, are you okay? And I thought he was joking. I was like, yeah, I'm fine. What's wrong? And he said, you were shaking in your sleep last night. I had to wake you up. And there was blood everywhere and you were biting down on your lip. And I just thought he was joking. And then he just said, look at your pillow. And I put my hand up to my lips and my lips were massive. There was blood on my pillow. Obviously, like we were after having a few drinks, like if we hadn't, he even said he put me on my side because he could hear me gurgling on my blood.
Right. God, OK.
And he put me on my side and he knew that I was safe. But like, do you know, if we weren't after having a few drinks, he probably would have freaked out a bit more, maybe rang an ambulance. But he told me the next day, and because it was around Christmas time, I think that was actually a Sunday, I'm not sure now, but the doctors were closed. So I waited a few days and like I am fairly calm anyway. Mm-hmm. And we waited a few days and I rang the doctor and got an appointment. And I just said that like I didn't know what was wrong. I didn't know what she could do to tell me what happened.
So you waited a few days after it happened before you contacted the doctor?
Yeah.
Okay. So that is probably a reflection of how laid back you are, which is a great quality in many respects.
Yeah.
But in a situation like this. Yeah. But look, yeah. So you took a few days and then you made that call.
Yeah.
And what did they say?
My doctor, she's just amazing. Like, she's a fantastic lady. She has known me since I was a child. So she knows my medical history. She knows my parents, everything. And she said, Alana, maybe you were just a bit stressed. And that's like, it could have been a fit, because there is a big difference between a seizure and a fit. I don't know what it is, but there is a difference. So she put it down to that. And I was like, yeah, I think you're right. And I just said that I wanted to get my bloods done and just check me in every way possible, just just for peace of mind, basically.
Yeah, 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 of course.
So we done that, and then nothing came back. Everything was okay.
Right. So normal.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it was around Christmas time, and maybe 2 weeks after that, I was going out with my friends from work. And, like, I am normally a party animal. Like, I love having fun. Like, I'm the first one to say yes. Like, if we're going to have... if there's fun to be had, I'll have it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that night that we went out, I drove into town and I said, lads, I'm not drinking. Like, that was so unlike me. But I knew that there was something wrong.
And when was this now?
This was, it was probably the end of January.
Okay.
I didn't know what was wrong, but it really, like, it did. I am a calm person, but it shook me up, because I was like, I just want to look after myself. Like, I was so afraid if I drank again, it would happen again.
Right, okay.
And I just didn't know what the cause was.
And were you worried that was the reason it happened? As in, like, because we a lot of people listening, and myself, I enjoy a drink now and again.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm not a raving alcoholic, if I sound like one.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Just a normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Socialized.
Exactly. So you were having a few drinks, but nonetheless, were you worried that maybe I won't do that in case that is the reason why I had you know, a fit or a seizure or whatever it was? Was that what was going through your mind?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
As well, I hadn't, like, with work and everything, because I was working such long hours and everything, I always drank a lot of Red Bull, lots and lots of coffee. And at that stage as well, I had stopped drinking Red Bull. I had stopped drinking as much coffee, because I was just like, right, I need to just slow down a little bit and just stop. Do you know what I mean? Just to kind of check in with myself. I don't know what I was doing, but I think I knew deep down there was something wrong.
Okay. What was it before then? What was an average day like for you? So, because when you said things like, you know, when you were really busy, you may go like a few days without actually eating a decent meal.
Yeah.
And then you were loading up on like caffeine drinks and that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
What would have been a typical day?
Well, say
when you were really busy.
On a really busy day. Okay. So like a Friday, I would wake up and I had a half an hour drive. Like, it's only half an hour, but it was stressful. So I had two small children, had to get them up early. And like, if I hit traffic on the road, I'd be late half an hour before I got there.
Yeah.
So it was just up and stress straight away. Then I'd have to drop one off at one childminder's, another off at preschool. And then I'd get into work, like, flying in the road in the car. As soon as I dropped them off, I'd probably have a can of Red Bull, like, slam it down before I got to work.
Okay.
And then 9 o'clock, make my list. And every single day I was like, will I actually manage to get it done? Like, I mean, it was just completely insane, just the workload. But I always got it done. Throughout the day, I would have coffees, and I could possibly have a toasted sandwich, if anything. Like, from, I started work at 9 and then I'd finish probably 10 and then have to drive home again. And like, sometimes I'd just go out and sit in my car for half an hour, just thinking like, Jesus, I'm so happy I'm finished. But then get in the car. And then by the time I went home, more often than not, Martin would be in bed, like all the kids in bed. And it was just like, even thinking about it now, I just feel so sad that, as I said, I had to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy I did do it, because I got the result that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel so sad for myself that I did that to myself. Do you know? But it had to be done.
Yeah. And beating yourself up over it is, as you know, it's wasted and pointless. And your intention, which is always, I think, the most important thing, was so pure and so good. You wanted to provide, you know, a really good life for your family.
Yeah.
And the irony is, like, you being a chef, you were minding everyone else and serving up gorgeous plates of food for people to eat. And yet you were barely getting by on a toasty for the day, like.
But I didn't even, like, just looking at it, you know, I just, I wouldn't have even been able to eat because, you know, just so much coffee, everything. I think that's just typical chef or you got to go the other way.
So there we are. It's the end of January and you have decided I'm just going to chill out on the booze for the moment until I know kind of what's going on. Where were you then?
I was still on maternity leave. Yeah. I had Martin at home for the first 2 weeks and it was such a luxury because I am, like, I've always been, I'm such an independent woman, do you know? And even to that, it was a luxury having him at home because I didn't have to do every single thing myself and I just wasn't used to it. But yeah, I was just enjoying my life. We had lived in the house for maybe at that stage 4 years before we bought it, and so, like, just making plans just to finally put our own stamp on our house, like, that was, I was thinking about that and I was just enjoying every single second with my babies
because it felt official. You could finally then
and just relax.
Do the things and relax and enjoy it,
just everything. It's like the moment that house became ours, that was, we were, I mean, on cloud nine.
Yeah.
Like, nothing could have knocked us off. Our life was fine. Everything was in place. We were where we wanted to be. And yeah, we were just in heaven. Mm. Like, every single day was a good day. Mm. And that sounds ridiculous, just being at home.
It doesn't.
But I was really appreciating everything.
No. It doesn't surprise me about you. And I've seen you, watched you, followed you and how you speak. And even despite everything, you've been thrown this unbelievable curveball. Your attitude has always been phenomenally optimistic. Like, I've met a lot of optimistic people in my life, but I think you're in another league altogether.
I don't know. Do you know what? Sometimes I was very upset now kind of last week. But sometimes I think, I'm like, do I actually realise what's going on? Mm. Or am I still in shock? But, like, I do, I have my down days. But as well, I really, really think, you know, with all of this, it was a different story at the start, obviously. But now my whole outlook is, like, I can't sit down. If I think about it, I'm going to get really upset.
Yeah.
But every day I wake up and, for example, touch wood everywhere, if I was to die next year, I would be so annoyed if I spent the last year crying about it. Mm. That's why I think I made that decision really early, that I'm just going to enjoy every single day, because I would hate to be on my deathbed. Touch wood, it won't be for a very, very long time. Mm. But I'd hate to be on my deathbed going, oh, I wish I enjoyed, do you know, the days that I had, because now this is awful. Or even if I somehow become, I don't know, less able or something, like, I'm not, I don't know what could happen. Like, my speech could go, or I don't know what could happen. Mm. But I just really, while I can, I want to enjoy every single day. Do you know? It's just so important.
Yeah. So February last year, this time last year, it was approaching Valentine's Day. Yeah. And you decided to spend time with friends of yours.
Yeah. So my best friend, we both decided, and, like, we only had arranged this the week before. Like we said, realistically, we're not going to be able to get out for Valentine's night. And my husband and her partner were working together the day after Valentine's Day. So we decided that it would be lovely if we just all celebrated it as a family, that I would go down, Martin would go there after work, and that I'd go down with the kids. And we'd get a takeaway or something, but just enjoy it as a family.
Yeah.
Rather than be on our own.
Yeah. Lovely. So you're there and you're having a nice time.
Having a lovely time. We had chocolate lollipops. Phoebe was just 3 months old at the time. And she was wearing her little baby grow love hearts on it. Like, it was just a really, and I was like, we need to do this all the time. This was lovely. Mm. And then the lads came home from work. And yeah, we were just eating and had a lovely evening. Mm-hmm. Then the next day, the plan was, actually, sorry, that day I had loaded up the car. Like, I felt fine. I loaded up the car from my house and had all the kids in the car. And I was just getting stressed again because, like, there's so much equipment with a newborn. So I had to, like, you know, put in the dogs, get the travel cot, get all the bags, get this, everything, like bottles, sterilizer,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, yeah. And Finn and Luke are still so young at the stage, yeah, as well. Yeah.
So I was just a bit stressed. And then I had drove out of the yard and I was like, oh, I forgot about the dogs. So I went back and I put the dogs in, and then I think something fell out of the boot. I had opened the boot and something fell out, and I went down to pick it up and my back just went. Okay. And I still don't know if this, I don't think it was related, but my back was so bad. I was just thinking, oh, I actually can't go down here now this evening. And in the meantime, anyway, my friend rang me and she said, where are you? And I said, I'm just leaving now. My back is so sore. Whatever.
And did you suffer from back pain before?
I actually, like, this is another, like, drama. I was actually in a car crash when I was 18 and I had broke my back.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Yeah. Okay. You've been faced with a lot.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm just so calm. Like, nothing can faze me.
Right. Okay.
So it's all good.
Okay. 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 Ish. Mm-hmm. Right. So your friend rings.
So she rings and then I was like, okay, yeah, I'll see you in an hour. I'll be there in an hour. Because I was after spending so much time packing up the car and everything. And I just didn't want to let her down. And just thank God that I did decide to go down. So we went down and we just had a lovely evening.
What happened the next day?
Then the next day, the next day, I was after sleeping upstairs with Phoebe and Martin. And then I woke up and I was lying in bed for a few minutes because I was just thinking, I was like, how is my back? Because I could barely walk that evening. Okay. And so I was just lying there kind of thinking, oh, how is this now? And I could hear all the lads upstairs. She had two children as well. And I could just hear everyone having fun downstairs. And I was like, right, I better get up and go down and see them all. So I picked Phoebe up. At this stage, she was 3 months old and just absolutely tiny.
Yeah.
And I picked her up and walked down the stairs and I was struggling because my back was so bad.
And had you decided to call a doctor or get any advice on what to do? I mean, if it sounds like the pain was horrific.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. But you see, that's just me.
And you just get on with it.
Yeah.
Or I'll be grand.
It's like an Irish mammy, like,
yeah, battle on through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now I knew that I was going to have to go see someone, that there was something wrong. Mm. But I just went down and I walked into the sitting room. So I was after walking down a really, really steep stairs.
And
with
you're holding Phoebe.
Phoebe,
yeah.
Yeah. And I just walked to the sitting room doors and, like, I can just remember every single second. I had her in my arms and next minute my whole body just tensed up. And I just felt like I was a statue. Like, I just felt rock solid. I was looking at my friend and I was trying my best to say help. And, like, my tongue was getting pulled to the back of my throat. And I was just trying my best just to stretch out my arms to get Phoebe onto the couch. And, like, all of her children were in the room and my friend was there as well. And she just, like, I can just still see her face in my mind now thinking about it. And, like, thank God she was calm. She just came running over and actually, like, I must have just went down on the ground and she put out her arm, caught Phoebe by the baby grow. Otherwise, I would have fell on top of her. And I was just lying on the ground and I had a massive seizure. Like, there's lots of things that I can't remember, but I'm going to say it was half an hour on and off. But, like, I was frothing at the mouth. All of our children were there. Like, the oldest was 7, the youngest was Phoebe, 5 children. And then in the meantime, my friend had rang the ambulance. So they were on the phone directing her what to do before the ambulance came. She was on the phone to medics or whoever answers the phone.
That's so scary.
Yeah.
God love you.
But so lucky that I was in her company.
Yeah.
Because I would have, like, on a normal day, or if I hadn't have went, I would have been at home completely kids. On my own. And like, you know, Martin's so busy, so my phone probably wouldn't have rang until that evening. So like, even when I think about that, it just makes me feel sick.
That makes you wonder, doesn't it? Like the fact that you decided to go to your friends, and even though your back went at the car and you were in that type of pain, mm-hmm. you know, she rings you. You get there, you get to the house, because as you said, if you had just gone, do you know what, I can't go anywhere, my back's too sore,
and I was so close,
you don't even want to
that.
Think yeah okay
do you know.
And how like, so the ambulance came, and I suppose you don't obviously want to think of the alternative, if you had been on your own, what that would have meant, but your memory of it, is it clear or not clear?
Well, basically I know that I was in the house. I was completely unconscious. So the ambulance arrived, and then they were, I think they just kind of let me do my thing for a while on the floor.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
And then she rang her partner and my husband, and then they came, and then basically they bundled me up into the ambulance, and then I came round in the ambulance, but I had no recollection. I had remembered everything that I described, like feeling like I was going to fall. It was like a magnet pulling me to the floor, and I just couldn't fight it. So I came round in the ambulance, and the medic just said, "What's your name?" And I knew my name was Alana, but I didn't know what age I was, and I didn't know what day it was. And then he said, "Do you have children?" And then it just hit me. And I just started like screaming and bawling, crying, because I was like, I have children, but where are my children? And I didn't know what their names were. And I didn't know if they were boys or girls. I didn't know what age they were. I knew nothing about them. And I was just screaming because I knew I had children, but I didn't know where they were. It was so, so frightening.
I can't imagine how frightening that must have been for you.
And I didn't, I didn't really know what was after. Like, he told me, "Oh, you're after having a seizure," but like, I didn't even really know. Like, I knew what a seizure was, but I didn't really know what it was. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
Yeah.
I don't think you know until, well, you need to know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And when did you start to remember that your kids were Finn, Luke, and Phoebe? When did that start to come back?
I'd say it was probably like 5 or 6 hours later.
Okay.
They brought me to the hospital and I got admitted. And it's really, really strange. Things are kind of blurry. Mm. But I got admitted to hospital and I was there, and then Martin was there. And I don't even remember coming around like in the bed or anything. But then as soon as I saw Martin, I was like, "Please just tell me every single thing that happened." And I rang my friend because I just wanted to know everything, and I needed to know that the lads were safe. And like, obviously with my friend, she's one of my best friends. We've been friends forever. And I literally trust her with my life.
Yeah, of course.
And I did.
Yeah, and you did. Yeah.
Poor girl's been tested. But yeah, it was like that evening, probably that night. And it just hit me. And I felt a bit sad. But I never thought for a second that this is a sign of a brain tumour, or that it was even a sign that there was something wrong with my brain.
Yeah, okay.
I was fully thinking, okay, I might have epilepsy or something. But I didn't have a clue.
Yeah, okay.
Like, not a clue what was after happening.
And I suppose, why would you?
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to think about these things, and also, why would we think about these things, you know? So you're in hospital for... They keep you in, obviously.
Yeah.
You're in for a good few days. And then they talk to you about your options and discuss an operation.
I was in that hospital for about a week. And even talking to my mother about it, I don't think they didn't really know what was wrong. And I didn't know what was wrong. And I was saying as well, I was just taking, I think I was taking anti-seizure tablets, because that's what had happened. And then at the time, my back was still really sore, so they were giving me pain relief. But I was there for about a week, and then I was taken by ambulance down to, not because there was something wrong, but just for travel.
Sure, to bring you there.
I went down to Cork, and a surgeon discussed my scan and said that there was a large mass on my brain. And I had two options. Option one was to just leave it and stay taking anti-seizure medication and see what happens. Or else I could have an operation and then they would take out, debulk as much as possible and send it off to be, what's that word?
Yeah, biopsied.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was the plan. And like, if there's a problem, I'm just there to solve it. Like, sure. I would never have just left it.
Mm.
And I wanted to know as well what it was. So we spoke about it and, like, I didn't even know it could be cancer. I had no idea.
Mm.
And I just said, he had mentioned the word cancer. And then, like, I thought tumour as well. I was like, oh, God, that could be cancer. But he said, there's probably a 3% chance that it's cancer, because you're apparently, when it's a scan without cancer, it's very clean cut around the outside. If it isn't cancer, and then if it is cancer, it's more kind of clawed or something. The edges aren't straight. So he said there's a good chance that it isn't cancer.
So I suppose you were getting bad news, but also in a way, kind of good news in
yeah.
that at the time, 3%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if your wiring was to be a little on the negative, you couldn't help but feel optimistic with those
yeah,
odds.
Yeah, definitely. I really, like, I was, me and Mam, like, we were having, like, we always just have the laugh at the most inappropriate times. Like, we had the best time in the ambulance on the way to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the way back, they were like, Jesus, like, she's after getting bad news now. And I was, it really, really hit me. I was like, okay, this isn't funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is something that's serious. Yeah, once he said tumour, it did scare me and stuff. But as well, what really just sounded alarming to me, like, I knew if this, like, I know so much more than I knew then, obviously. But the fact that he said, I think it was either a week or it could have been 8 days, because, like, right, I'll see you here next Wednesday or whatever day it was.
Mm.
And I was like, Jesus, like, this, like, as soon as he said that as well, alarm bells started ringing, because I was like, I'm having brain surgery next week. And so at that stage, like, I went home and I was still myself, but I was a lot more quieter. Like, it had shaken me up.
Mm.
And, I was thinking, you know, oh, I'm going to lose a lot of my hair. And I wasn't even thinking radiation or anything like that. I was just thinking they're going to operate. And he had made it quite clear. He's like, look, we're not going to be, we'll leave her this bit of hair to make sure she looks nice. He said, I'm going to be scalping, like, taking off your hair, because we need to get in there. So I was actually really, really prepared. But yeah, I was just so nervous. I remember, so it was probably about a week in between, and the night before surgery, I went down and I was staying at my mother-in-law's house, because she was going to mind the children the day after, while I went for surgery and Martin was going to come with me. And I just remember that night, like, I have photos on my phone, and it just gives me the creeps looking at them, because I was there and I remember I had my hair down. Like, my hair has always been really, really long.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even have thought, like, oh, you know, I'm so girly or anything like that. But it's not about being girly. It's just you're stripped.
Mm.
And it's not your choice, do you know? So I was thinking, I was just looking at my hair and I was like, I'm going to actually have no hair now. And even I knew that they were shaving half of it. But I had prepared myself. I was like, I am all or nothing in every single thing that I do.
Mm.
And I said, like, I'm not going to go around with half a head of hair, so I will shave it all off. So, yeah, I was just trying to prepare myself for the week.
And when you look back at the photos, what did you feel?
It just upsets me, because what really upsets me the most is, and even now, like, I just feel, I think as the time has gone by, like, last year I was busy with, well, been a mom.
Sure.
I had radiation, like, 30 days, chemo for 6 months. So last year was jam packed. But I think now, even this year, when I look back on photos, I just feel really sad, because, like, my children, I had a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old and a newborn. And I'm like, I shouldn't have had to worry about going, like, having an away craniotomy. I shouldn't even know what it is.
Yeah.
And I just feel sad that while on maternity leave, that happened. Like, you know, just looking at the size of them just makes me realise like this was a really huge thing.
Yeah, of course.
And that's what gets to me, just seeing how young they were.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah, yeah. So the operation itself was long. It was 5 hours.
Yeah.
And you were actually awake for a chunk of time as well. You had to be.
Yeah. For the operation, I'm not squeamish or anything like that. I was actually genuinely interested in what was going to happen. And I hadn't, like they said, look, here are the side effects. Your speech could be affected. You could, like, this is like worst case scenario. You could end up losing movement in the left-hand side of your body because my tumour is on the right. But all of those things, I was like, I'll be grand. It'll be fine.
And clearly, thankfully,
yeah,
that didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was very, very lucky because obviously, like, something bad could have happened
to me.
But I had the operation and they were just the loveliest. Like, I remember the anaesthetist. I can't say that word ever. I don't even know why I attempted it. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Don't worry. We all do.
He was so nice. I just remember while I was awake for probably, it could have been half an hour, it could have been an hour. And the whole time I had a squeezy toy in my left hand and I kept having to squeeze it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Just to make sure that I had the movement. But he was just rubbing my arm. And I keep thinking, did he know that it was cancer? Because he seemed nearly too, like he was just so, so lovely. And I was just thinking, I had said to them, I was like, oh, can I see what you're doing there? Because I wanted them to get a mirror or something. But he just kept rubbing
my arm.
And
did you see?
No, I didn't.
No.
I wanted to actually see what they were after taking out, but I didn't.
Yeah. They're talking you through it. So this is bizarre. So you don't feel any pain, but you're lucid. You're aware. You're awake.
Yeah.
And you're squeezing this squeezy toy.
Yeah, that I still have.
Okay, do you?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was just absolutely mental. Like I remember I was kind of half, I was totally listening to what they said. But now I was very, like, obviously I was completely out of it.
Mm.
I didn't feel, do you know the way sometimes you might feel sensations, they say, if you get a C-section or whatever. But I couldn't feel a single thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've looked it up afterwards. Basically, my head was in like a steel brace.
Okay.
Sticking into my head. So there was no way, even if I did wake up or something went really, really wrong, that I was able to move.
Okay.
So I just stay still. And I just remember, obviously, I was squeezing the toy. But then as well, I kept on falling back into a deep sleep and I'd start snoring and like actually go, Jesus, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. But then they were talking about, I just remember they were talking about stem cell treatment and stuff. And then I was just chatting away to them about stem cell. I don't know what we were talking about, but whatever. It was just so surreal.
Yes.
I was
just
lying there chatting away while they were doing their job.
Yeah. And it is. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
But the operation was a success.
Yeah.
You came to. And then, am I right in thinking a few weeks later, you got a call?
Yeah. So I was very lucky. I mean, recovery time and everything. I think I got out of hospital maybe 3 days after the surgery.
It's very quick, considering huge operation like that.
Very quick. And I was okay. Physically, I was actually fine. I didn't have as much energy as I would have. And little things started to really freak me out at home. Like, I remember one day, I just said I'd go up and change the boys' bed covers. Mm. And they have two single beds, bunk beds. And I was up there for 3 hours trying to put one. And I said, I'm really, really independent.
Yes.
Like, to a fault. And I was just struggling. I was just like, how do you do this? Like, something that I would have done in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I didn't even ask for help. I was like, no, I'll get there. I'll be fine. 3 hours had passed.
And you wouldn't ask for help?
No.
Okay.
Like, in the end, I said to Martin, I was like, you're going to have to do that. I can't do it. Like, I barely got a sheet on. So just things, I was getting really frustrated.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I've tried to send an email one day and it took like half an hour. Do you know, just these little things that, but obviously, like, I'm back to normal now.
Sure. So initially, what did they kind of prepare you for? A delayed reaction with things, or maybe that there would be some damage until time passed and you kind of regained all of, you know,
yeah,
all the functions of the brain, I suppose, and what you had before.
Yeah.
Did they prepare you for that?
Yeah, but they obviously gave me the worst possible things that could happen.
Yeah.
So I wasn't ready for little things like that.
Sure, I get you.
You know,
yeah.
So I was a little bit freaked out. But basically, I got out of hospital on whatever day it was. And then I think 2 days later, the whole country went into lockdown. I had been told on a normal basis, when they send it off, it's back within a few days, the results. But because lockdown was just after happening, like, nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Like, what was happening. I thought it'd be about a week, and then I rang the hospital. Like, doctors weren't in there. Certain nurses weren't in there. I was basically ringing a phone that wasn't been answered. I'd just get through to an answering machine or a receptionist, and I left it a week and then rang them. And then... I didn't hear any news, and then I rang them again a week later, and then I was kind of like, 2 weeks had passed, and I was like, oh Jesus, like, I'm basically hanging around waiting to see if I have cancer. And I just started getting really, really just full of frustration and worry, and that's not like me. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, at that stage, I didn't think I definitely have cancer, but I was just feeling like I did have it.
Yeah,
so I was waiting for the phone call. Like, I had my phone in my hand every single second of the day. And then I saw a Cork number come up, and I just ran upstairs. And even just before I answered it, I was like, oh, shit. I just knew.
Did you?
Yeah. I don't know how I did, because I am a really, really, like, optimistic, like, a ridiculously optimistic person. Mm. Yeah, and then I ran up to my bedroom, and like, my children were in the house. Martin was at home, because at that stage as well, like, obviously I needed full-time care. Like, yeah. I'm not going to the toilet or anything, I was able. I couldn't be left alone at any stage of the day.
Yeah.
So like, my independence as well, completely gone.
Yeah. Which is so hard for somebody like you as well, who's so used to being so independent. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I had to go to the toilet with the door open. I'd go upstairs so no one could see me. But I couldn't, you know, I couldn't lock doors.
Yeah.
If I was having a shower, like, at the start, because we didn't know what could happen. And, like, at that stage as well, I was having seizures. We didn't know when I was going to have one. And
did you have many?
I had a few, but like, I think a week after my operation, I had one at home, and we were just so freaked out because the last time it happened,
it was
the day. Mm-hmm. So we were thinking, like, God, I'm going to go unconscious, and, you know, the worst situation possible. So I had one day, and like, now, if it happened to me today, I wouldn't ring an ambulance. But I had one day, and we rang the ambulance. And of course, like, Finn and Luca are there. They're seeing an ambulance coming for their mommy again. Mm-hmm. But we just said, oh, because this virus, the doctors are closed. So we're going to ring an ambulance just to come and check me out.
Yeah.
But they had to come into the house, like, head to toe in white suits. Like, just, it's so foreign, just so strange. I've kind of gone off on one there.
No, you're not. So you're at home, and You get the call and you go upstairs.
Yeah, sorry. So I went upstairs. Martin, I'm sure he had heard me legging it up the stairs. And I was just on the phone and the doctor, he basically said, so, Alana, he said, so, yeah, we sent it off for a biopsy and you have a high-grade tumour. And like I had my notebook beside me because at this stage as well, my head, like I still prefer having a pen and paper with me at all times because it's just less stress. I'm not going to forget something. Mm. Do you know, if I write down stuff?
Yeah.
And I've always journaled and stuff anyway.
Yeah.
But so I just, he just said to me, yeah, it's a high grade tumour. And I was just, word for word, he was saying, like, I still have my diary at home because it was just last year. And I have a whole page of just writing. Like, I was writing out every single thing that he said.
Okay.
Like, I didn't know. I had to ask him. I said, does that mean I have cancer? And he said, yeah, you have cancer. And, like, I asked him that. And I was just like, okay. And, I wasn't able to breathe. I felt like I was being murdered while I was awake. Do you know, I felt like someone was... I don't even have words for it now. Like, I still can't even describe it.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the meantime, Martin came in the door, saw me lying on the ground, like just shaking on the phone, trying to write down as much as possible. Like, while I was on the phone, I was like, okay, and what does that mean? So I just knew I had a high grade tumour. And then he said, I just said, does this mean like I'm going to die? Like, is my life expectancy affected? And he said, oh, it's greatly affected. And like, I wasn't able to ask. It wasn't his fault. If I had 50 billion questions to ask him, he would have answered them.
Mm.
But I had wrote down things like, when can I wash my hair? When can I go on holidays? When can I drive again?
Yeah.
Like, all these irrelevant things. Like, I was actually just crossing out every single question because I was like, that is all crap. None of it matters now. So over the phone then, I was completely silent. There were the only two questions I asked. And I said, okay, so what am I going to do now? And he said, well, you're going to have radiation. And I was like, what? Radiation? I didn't know what radiation was. And chemo, I presumed chemo, I'd be getting a drip. So I'd be away from my children every day for like 7 or 8 hours for 6 months. Everything was just absolutely horrific. And it got to a stage then. He said, okay, have you got any more questions? And like, Martin was there crying. The two of us were just crying. And I just said, no, bye. And like, I couldn't even say goodbye to him.
Sure.
And I just hung up the phone. And so for 3 weeks then, like, I only knew what he was after saying, high grade tumour and cancer. So all I had was Google. Nobody's fault, just down to COVID, basically.
He didn't put you in touch with anyone to talk to?
No, I think at the time he told me who my nurse would be,
right,
as far as treatment goes. But I just had Google, so I was looking up the thing that I have. It's called glioblastoma multiforme,
mm,
and it's a grade 4 brain tumour. It's a very aggressive type of cancer. But when I was looking it up, you know, Google, but Google said I'd be dead in 12 to 18 months. And like, Phoebe was 3 months old.
Jesus. And the fact that because of COVID, they weren't maybe booking you in for sessions with actual medical experts who could talk you through it.
Yeah.
You're getting your information online,
yeah,
which at the best of times, even if you put in a sore thumb,
yeah,
it can sometimes lead to a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah,
scary. You were already being delivered this really horrific news, but then probably making it worse. And by no fault of your own, I think everyone, including myself, would probably do the same thing. And I did. I did Google my own cancer,
yeah,
when I got diagnosed.
You were dead.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're reading this, but then you don't have any, it's a bit of a vacuum. And I suppose people listening as well, unfortunately, there will be plenty of people who have been diagnosed with cancer in the past 12 months.
Yeah.
Or maybe they've just found out, or wherever they are in their own situation. And mm-hmm. There's a lot of fear about, you know, going in to see your doctor at the moment. You know, we're all being told to stay at home, but there has to be calculated risks as well,
yeah,
in terms of, you know, going to see your doctor, getting the help you need and moving mm-hmm. ahead, because it's so important.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this was right at the beginning of the first lockdown. There was a huge amount of fear.
And just the unknown.
The unknown. And you weren't given, you really weren't given much information. And this is not about blame game or anything.
No,
but it's just
at all.
It's just a fact. You weren't.
Yeah.
So God love you. So you're at home and you're Googling and you're how are you remaining calm?
I wasn't.
You weren't.
Like, the girl that you see now, like, I'm a year into it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I just found out, like, I couldn't, like, all day, every day, I was just crying my eyes out. Like, I couldn't do anything without crying. And obviously, like, I'm trying to hide it from my children.
Yeah.
But even little things, like, just, I remember one night we were sitting down watching a movie and I just had to get up. I was trying to avoid my children because when I saw them, like, I just feel like I'm crying now even thinking about it. When I saw them, it just hurt me. Like, I felt like someone, I was just been murdered. Like, I can't, like, even thinking about it now. But just, you know, holding their little hands. We were watching a movie one night and I just had to get up and just leave them because I wasn't able. And it was like, you know, normally if you cry, you get it out and whatever. But this was just endless. Like, and even now, like, even today, like, I'm much better at dealing with it because I've basically trained myself to do it. But most problems go away or else you can find a solution. But, like, this is never going to go away. And that at the start of it, like, I've had all sorts of stuff thrown at me through life and I've always, like, found a solution, worked through it, whatever. But at the start of all this, like, I'd wake up at night time and I was like, there is no solution to this. Like, why, when will I ever stop crying? Because this will never get better until I'm dead from it. Do you know, like, there was no bottom to it. Like, I was going to, when I die, that will be the bottom of it. And yeah, there was just no light at the end of the tunnel. Do you know?
I'm so, I actually am lost for words because when you say that.
It is shocking. Like,
it's shocking.
Yeah. It really, really is.
But there's so many things I want to ask you and get into still at this point of the conversation. I know we've been talking for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But so you've had the operation. You've been told it's cancer. You've been told it's terminal cancer.
Yeah.
Then you have your treatment. You have radiation first, is it? And then you have your chemo.
Yeah.
Okay.
And normally they'd be done side by side. But
right.
Because of COVID. And even at the time, I was like, oh my God, am I going to die because my treatment's delayed?
Yeah.
They just thought it was too risky to combine the two and they pushed chemo out a little bit further because they were just so worried. They thought it was the safest thing to do. And it was the safest thing to do.
Mm. And then when are you actually told about percentages are, you know, what your chances are in terms of your quality of life or how long your life will be. And none of us have a crystal ball, so none of us know, unfortunately.
Yeah.
None of us know when it is that we're going to take our last breath. But when you're faced with a diagnosis like yours, it brings it into sharp focus.
Yeah.
So what were you told?
Because I only had Google.
Yeah.
I had the worst case scenario in my head and I was like, this is what's happening, this is how long I have left. So this was a good thing. So that's what I thought, a year to a year and a half. Like, I was thinking about writing letters, going to see a solicitor. Do you know, I was thinking about all these things. But then anyway, on the first day I went into the cancer centre, like, still couldn't even believe that I was there. And like, I just felt, do you know the way everyone's always like, oh, I'm so old. I just felt like I was a teenager going in here. Yeah, I just felt so young.
Yeah, but you were like, you're 33 now. So I mean, it was only last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is so young. I was 32 when I was diagnosed as well. You don't, that's not.
The same age. That is crazy.
Yeah.
It's the last thing you expect.
It's the last thing you expect.
It really is. But I went into the cancer centre and I met with the doctor who was going to give me my radiation plan. And he said to me, he said, well, look, you need to think you've got good things on your side. You're young. You're after having your operation. You've had no, like, obviously I had my moments, you know, my brain was in recovery.
Sure.
But he said, you're doing really, really well. Your speech isn't affected. You just show good signs right now. And he said, we'll basically give people a 50% chance of living longer than 2 years. So when I heard that, I was like, oh, okay, that's not so bad. Well, as in compared to what I was used to thinking.
Okay, I
so
getcha.
I just felt like a little bit of weight had been taken off my shoulders.
Okay, yeah.
Like as bad as it sounds, but I was like, okay, that's...
But you were seeing the light. You were seeing the light.
A little bit of light,
yeah.
A glimmer.
Right.
So after speaking to him, that was a good thing. And then my plan was...
Well, where's it to anybody else hearing that? It's you know, but anyway, I get it, because you've gone from horror online to, okay, percentages-wise.
Just possibly seeing my daughter walk.
Okay.
Do you know, like, that's the reality of it.
Okay.
And, like, obviously I'm a lot more positive now because, like, every day I know more and I'm getting further into it. But so then I had 30 sessions of radiotherapy, and while... Oh, this was actually so sad, right? So I had shaved my head after the operation. I came home and I actually decided that the boys would shave it.
Okay.
I come home and say, look at my silly hair. Will you please help me? Because I look ridiculous. So they shaved it off. Obviously, Martin went and cleaned it up afterwards. So I didn't even cry because I was just sitting there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had to keep it together for them.
And you made it a kind of a play, kind of a bit of...
Just so they wouldn't get freaked out. Because it was such a change.
Yeah.
And then my hair started coming back. And then for radiotherapy, after about 2 weeks of it, I had a receding hairline. Like, actually horrific. Like a monk or something. My hair completely went. That was a big thing for me. And I was just, I was kind of getting upset then because...
Sure.
I was saying to myself, I'd be fine if I was completely bald, but I have a receding hairline. And I was really upset. And obviously, like, my hair still isn't fully back. And I see people who've been, it is only a small thing. I'd rather be here with no hair than be dead with a full head of hair.
No, but it's still, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay.
So that was really, really tough. And then probably a few weeks into radiation treatment, I decided that I'd start up my Instagram page.
Yeah. And that was it. It was May, wasn't it, that you posted your first image. And, you know, basically it was an introduction to you and what you were going through. And your reason for setting up the Instagram page was for your kids.
Yeah, I think at that stage, I had decided, like, when I came home from hospital, the first thing I did is I went off and I bought 3 huge plastic boxes. And, like, it's just funny, like, I was cleaning like crazy. It was just like I was on another planet. But I got 3 large plastic boxes, and my number one thing was, right, I want all their baby stuff, like, you know, like their first dummy, their, like, their little teddies, their, you know, their first baby grow, their towel from the hospital. Sorry, I took it. All these things. Yeah. I just wanted them to be organised because I knew Martin would never get round to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was happy that I had done that. But I was just freaking out every single day going, if I drop dead, like, how can I... They won't remember me. They're not going to know, like, my personality. They won't know what I was like. How can I advise them through life? Do you know, like, if they're going to be in a situation where they're stressed, like, what advice can I give them? How can I leave my child with a letter that'll sum up life and me and how much I love them? Like, you can't just do that in a letter. And just so much silly things. Like, even for Phoebe, I know, like, I am actually very girly. And, do you know, like, makeup and her getting her period and me not being there and all this stuff. Like, I just wanted them, like, to leave them with advice. And I just found that Instagram was the one thing that I could do that would tick all these boxes. Like, they'll know who I was. They'll see, like, on my darkest days, like, I sat in bed crying, but I got on with it the next day. Yeah. Do you know, and one big worry for me is suicide, because I've been affected by it so much. And I'm always worried that, you know, whatever problems they face, that they won't, I won't be here to advise them. And I think that's my biggest worry. And that's why, like, even, do you know, every day I try and put up things, do you know, like, just these inspirational quotes that'll help them. I don't know, like, everything just has meaning now. And it was the, I just found that Instagram is the one thing that ticks all the boxes. Do you know, for like, they'll see our life together. They'll see me writing how I was feeling, how much I loved them.
Yeah.
Like, and it's only Instagram, but I do feel like it's the best way to do it. Mm. I won't be panicking if I'm dying to write a letter. Do you know what I mean? I'll actually, and I know this sounds so morbid, but I'll actually just get to rest for 5 minutes. Do you know? If that even makes sense, you know.
And do you think about that? Do you think about, I suppose it's inevitable and unavoidable that you would think about it.
Yeah.
How long do I have?
Yeah.
When you're faced with something like this.
Yeah, like I do, I think about it, but I think about it on my really bad days. Like I, like for example today, obviously we're talking about this, but like say, on a normal day, if I'm eating dinner, all I'm like, and this is an absolute gift, and I'm sure you have the same thing now. If I'm eating dinner, all I am thinking about is eating dinner. If I'm drinking, all I'm like drinking a glass of water, all I'm thinking about is this water.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm out walking, I'm thinking about the fresh air. I am so present and so in the moment now. And on my bad days are the days that I just can't. My head is racing ahead. I'm thinking of Phoebe getting married, or I'm thinking of like Finn going to college. My bad days are the days that I can't be in the moment and my head is racing ahead. And I am, yeah, I'm just like, I won't, like, even the chance of living longer than 2 years, 50% chance, like, that is better than what I thought. But then if I think about, like, my children are going to be 2, 6, and 7 or 8. And, like, that's not long enough.
It's not long enough.
So when I think about like that, and I very rarely do, I have 2 or 3 days a month where I'm just so upset and sad. But as well, at the same time, as bad as it is, I'm nearly getting used to it, which sounds ridiculous. Do you know?
No, it doesn't sound ridiculous, but I suppose, you know,
it's just life.
It is life now. Yeah. And so do you allow yourself to think of what if I'm that percentage or whatever that goes against the science, or manages to live longer than the odds I've been given?
Yeah.
Do you allow yourself to go to that place?
And oh, think, definitely.
I might be around.
I fully, fully believe. And this is why, like, obviously it's taken me a long time to get here. But I think my complete turning point, the time that I stopped crying every day, my sister-in-law, unfortunately, she has dealt with cancer, like, through her family for years. And her dad was told that he would die 16 years ago, and he's still here. So she came out and she said, look, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to take this, take that. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to be fine. Now, I don't think, like, obviously I really, really want to get away with it. But I fully believe with my diet, with everything that I'm doing to help myself, I know for a fact I gamble on it that I will be here longer than 2 years.
Well, that's it. I want to talk to you about that because, you know, you were talking before about on a really busy day, you'd be, you know, it would be Red Bull and coffee and maybe a toasted sandwich. And now what I'm seeing on your Instagram is healthy juices every day. You don't touch booze.
No.
You are fueling your body with the very best of food that you can get into you.
Yeah.
So what is a typical day like now?
Well, thank God as well. I don't know what my reason for having cancer is, but like now I know I was actually, the place I was working, it was vegetarian / vegan food.
Okay.
And I've always had such good knowledge of food. Like I am a chef. My mom is a chef.
Yeah.
So now I wake up in the morning and I think my friends must laugh at me because it's just so far from last year, but like it has to be that way now. But I wake up in the morning and I have a green juice. It's a pint of juice, celery, cucumber, lemon, and it's all like it's full of anti-inflammatory properties. Like my whole diet, I'm gone completely plant-based. I have my own chickens. I am a vegan, but I eat their eggs. Like they're chickens that we've hatched ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Wow. OK.
So we know, do you know, there's no they're not on any medication or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I eat plant-based, mostly organic. I put myself, like, I sit down in the morning. I take my time drinking that juice. Yeah. I make sure I have like a lovely lunch. I even, you would think, like my poor children, I feel like such a hypocrite. They're still getting fish fingers and beans and waffles or whatever. Like, but then I'm sitting down and I'm having this gourmet food. And as well, I just think it's the ultimate self-care. Like I make sure, I remember last year we were after planting all these flowers and I like every day I put like edible flowers on my plate and just really treating myself, just having a lunch, like just a basic thing, but just really, really looking after myself. So I'm taking loads of supplements, eating as many vegetables as I can. And like the proof is there. Food is medicine.
It is. And you know, I know this is a very superficial thing to say, but not alone are you very beautiful, and you are.
Thank you.
But you also look like the picture health.
Thank you.
You look so well.
Do you know what? And I'm not like full of myself or anything, but I have never felt better. I've always had issues with my skin. My skin is perfect.
Like yeah, okay.
I feel anything, but like I have cancer, never mind dying. Like I'm so alive. I'm more alive than I've ever been, I've never been more closer to death. Like, it's so messed up.
When you're given a diagnosis of cancer or any type of severe illness and you're faced with your own mortality, it also gives you the opportunity to really live.
Yeah, that's it. Were you the same?
Yeah.
Isn't it? But it's kind of, in a way, it's upsetting that
it takes that. And it's something that we speak about a lot, you know. And I say we, as in whoever I'm speaking to on the podcast, that, you know, we have these wake up calls or aha moments in our life due to trauma, difficulty.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be great if we all got there?
Oh, yeah.
Without it, with having to avoid those, you know, and sometimes, you know, you could still have been green juicing every day of your life and unfortunately been given a diagnosis of cancer. You know, that can happen too. So it's a whole mixed bag of stuff. But to wake up to realise the importance of actually looking after yourself, and minding yourself, it's huge, and appreciate your life.
Yeah, definitely.
And a lot of people are still stuck in the worry of, you know, what is tomorrow going to look like next week? And, you know, you're very laid back in your approach. You strike me as somebody who not a lot really phases them. But it's because you've been faced with a lot of difficulty. So you're not a sweating the small stuff kind of person.
Yeah. Like sometimes I get messages on Instagram. They're like, are you really okay all the time? And I genuinely, like I'm so, it's so important for me to be completely real.
Yes.
How appropriate.
Yeah.
But it really, really is, because at the end of the day, this is what I'm leaving for my children. I really want them to see if I had a problem, I cried about it and I was upset. But most of the time, I am absolutely fine. And me and my husband, we said the other day, like we were just thinking about the last year, and you know, it was January and whatever. And we were saying, you know, even though I got diagnosed with cancer last year, I was like, I still can't put it down as a bad year, because for the first time ever, like we're with each other for so long. We were at home with each other for the whole year and we still love each other. Like obviously we kill each other sometimes because it's been intense. We've been by each other's sides, but we had such a great year together as a family and just not working and not having any stress, do you know? So sometimes I'm just so happy and then I'm just like, no, that actually can't be happening. Like that can't be real that I actually had this cancer diagnosis. And that's why sometimes I think, no, I'm going to get away with it, because like everything I have, like we are blissfully happy. There's just one problem and that's it.
Yeah.
Everything else we're good. So like some days on my good days, I'm like, no, that can't be it. But then on my bad days, I'm just like, what the hell? Like, what did I do to deserve this?
Your treatment now, what does it look like? You've had your operation, you've had the radiation and the chemo. Yeah. What have they told you is next?
Basically, for now, that's it.
Okay.
Like, that is the standard care for a GBM. That's the shortened terminology for it. But so that's it for now. And for the rest of my life, I have to go for a scan every 3 months. Just basically, like, that's how aggressive it is, that it could just change within 3 months.
Okay.
So, like, I'm living life 3 months at a time. my last scan was on Phoebe's birthday. My next scan is on Martin's birthday.
Okay.
So hopefully they're good days. But like, I'm just so aware, and it's not been negative. I'm so aware that my life can change, I'm sure you know, within an instant. And like, I've had the rug pulled from underneath me. So I'm aware that it can change so quickly. But that's it for now, is just go for scans every 3 months. And if something does pop up, as if I have a reoccurrence, I think the options are, I'll probably be given chemo. I don't think I can get any more radiation. I think I've reached my limit. Mm. And then if it was grown very fast, I could get a debulking operation. So I have another operation just to try and take out as much as possible. Okay. Say they were able to get rid of 90% of it, but he basically described it as a piece of bread. If you take out the mold will eventually come back. So like, and you can imagine that it's so visual, isn't it? It's really accurate about what it is. So I'm just, yeah, fingers crossed, eat healthy, treat myself right, and I'll defy all the odds. Yes, this one.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Well, it's the fact as well that I'm a big believer in that it's not just what you fuel the body from a physical point of view, but it's also what you're thinking of, what your vibration is.
Yeah.
And certainly from chatting to you here today and from following you on Instagram, you know, yes, you have a cracking personality, great sense of humour, but you're also fearless and unbelievably positive.
Thank you. That's the biggest compliment. That's so nice.
It's just truthful. It is. It's just truthful. I have just been in awe of you.
Thank you.
And all your followers, I'm sure, would agree and then some. You really are one of life's unique people. I think a lot of us, and I've had it, I mean, Jesus, I had my moments of playing the victim when I got diagnosed, and my diagnosis is a completely different ballgame to yours, completely different. But you and I know you've said you've had your days and you've had your dark days, but you don't have an ounce of the victim about you. Your vibe is completely different. You know, you're, as you said, you're practical in your approach. You're like, okay, let's get on with this. Let's move on. You know, you've used words like you're independent, you know, and I can feel it from you that you are.
Mm.
And you've, because you haven't had it easy in life either. You've had a lot of stuff going on.
Every single turn, there's been something.
And I'm sure there's plenty more that we haven't even got into. Yeah. I sense it from you.
Yeah.
And that has formed the woman that you are today. I mean, you're a powerhouse. You're 33 and you're here and you are living more than most people ever live. Yeah. You're more alive than ever.
Yeah.
And that in itself is a powerful message.
Yeah.
Because we keep saying it because it is true. None of us know when it is that our life is going to end. And when that time comes for all of us, and if we're lucky enough to have that moment of reflection before we leave.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You don't want to look back and regret, but you're not going to.
I really hope I don't. Like, I, even with my food and everything, like, this is why I am so, like, such a stickler. Like, I've always been extremely determined, and I am very hard on myself. That's something that I need to really, really work on. Like, I decided, like, all these things that I, like, say if I was going to die tomorrow, like, I want to have a really good relationship with myself, because I didn't have before.
With yourself?
With myself.
Okay,
like,
I
used to look in the mirror and go, oh my God, like, the state of me today. I do not say one bad thing. Like, I couldn't find something last night and I was like, oh, I'm so stupid. And then I was like, no, don't say that.
Mm.
Like, I'm like, I go to bed at night and I say, Alana, you are lovely. And I wake up and I say it in the morning as well, because I was so terrified that I'd die without really loving myself and looking after myself. And even with my food and stuff, I am so, like, I am ridiculous about it. Like, even, you know, having a square, like, I have 85% dark chocolate, but then some days if I'm just like, I just want to gorge on crisps and everything. And if I do it, I just get so upset afterwards, because I'm just so worried that, like, I don't want to be on my deathbed and go, I should have tried harder. Do you know? Especially for my children. I want to eat as well as possible, do all the things. do you know, that will prolong my life. I would hate to be in my deathbed going, Jesus, I really wish, you know, I tried this or I didn't do that or whatever.
Now, I don't know if I'm crossing the line here, but if you do...
There's no line. Go on.
Okay. But if you do have a moment where you just want to gorge on the crisps and the chocolate, whatever...
Yeah.
Feckin' do it. And really? Don't be beating yourself up. My God, yeah. I think, like, you know, because your percentages of being good, you know what I mean? If you're if you're now eating, like, it's like night and day.
Yeah.
The Ilana before cancer and the Ilana now.
Yeah.
So if you have, like, you take a half an hour out of your day and you have some chocolate, Jesus, that's not going to set you back. Do you know what I mean? Because you're doing so well in the other stuff. It's if you were eating nothing and then you were just, that's the only food sources you were getting. Yeah, it probably wouldn't be the best thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is about a balance. It's about a balance physically, mentally and emotionally. It's about when they're in alignment. And if you're feeding your mind with positivity and just, you know, optimism, that's really healthy, that's really good, and you're doing it with your body as well. But in a way, that's the stress that brings on, if you're beating yourself up over having the bar of chocolate, you know, that in a way is
harmful.
It's counterproductive, isn't it? It's counterproductive. And you know, everything is, you know, everything in moderation, as they say. I'm a big believer in that. Anyway, you have to have a balance, and you're playing a blinder. Like, please just, you know, take a moment. And I'm glad you're telling yourself you're lovely.
Yeah.
You are doing unbelievably well. There are plenty of people, and I think it's safe to say I could very much be one of those people that if I was in your situation, I'd be crumbling in a corner somewhere. Look at you. You're here today. You are so present. You are speaking so well. I'm just blown away by you. I really am.
Well, thank you so much.
No, you don't need to thank me. It's just the truth. So look, life now is getting the house in order, you know, living day to day. But, you know, you really are living and you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the fact is you guys aren't working now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there will be more treatment that will be needed down the line. And perhaps there will be some revolutionary treatment, hopefully, that you might want to try or explore. Yeah. And that costs money.
Yes.
So, and it's something we discussed before we sat down to have this chat. And I know you're kind of uncomfortable about it, which also I think says a lot about your personality, which is a lovely thing. And it's basically that you have a GoFundMe page.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you know, and I've been through it myself. So I know that treatments are bloody expensive.
Yeah. Especially alternative.
And especially, like, alternative.
With my case as well, like, I've basically finished my treatment with the hospital. Like, obviously, they will reach out and help me if I have a recurrence, but, like, I'm pretty much like a goner. So my only hope, and this was the reason as well, this just set, like, the fire alight in my body.
Mm.
Like, obviously, I'm fighting for my life. I want to be here for my children. And me, like, before, I wouldn't have even put up a selfie on my old Instagram, because I was just like, it just wasn't me.
Yeah.
But I just want, like, even talking to you today, I just see it as another step, that if my back is up against the wall, the more people that hear my story and that know about my story, the more chance there is of me getting the help that I need.
Mm.
Like, at the moment, there is a trial. They're after starting a new trial. Like, it's so... They haven't really moved along with treatment for brain tumours. I think I'm going to say 15 years, nothing has really changed. So it's all trials, and it's very hard to get a trial, like, to find something that you're suitable for, that you fit the criteria. It's very, very small.
But knowing that, I suppose the funds are there and when...
Completely.
These treatments come along, that's important. So I will add the link into the show notes. And I think people are good. I really believe in that. I really believe in people power, and people want to help and they feel better for doing it, you know. So if you're listening to this conversation and you're feeling as I do, you want to do something and help, anything at all would be would help, you know. And if we all just gave a few bob, what would you like to say to your kids and to Martin?
I have thought about this so many times, like, as if, like, I am, oh my God, I'm getting emotional now again. But I've just thought about so many times, if I'm just lying there and I'm about to die, and the only thing that I can say, like, to anybody, because, like, I'm not like an old lady or anything, but just be kind to yourself. Like, that's the number one thing that I, if I could just choose one sentence to say, be kind to yourself and just love yourself. That's it. Just because I think when you are kind to yourself and you love yourself, everything else falls into place. Yeah. Do you know, like, I think there's a, I think that's the most important thing in life now. Do you know, and I'm finally kind to myself. And as weird as this sounds, I have been so much more stressed in other circumstances than I have been throughout this last year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because over everything, my relationship with myself has gone so much better that I can handle stuff. And yeah, just to be kind to yourself, I think it's just so important. You know, like that's all I could say.
Yeah.
If it came down to one thing, that is it.
Yeah, because when you're kind to yourself, you're looking after yourself. And when you're looking after yourself, it means that you're able to look after other people.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Well, look, I wish you nothing but good health and continued good health, because what you're doing now is clearly working and clearly, mm-hmm. you know, you're feeling good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope your scans go well. I hope there will be more treatment available, and I think continue doing what you're doing because it's powerful and it's important. I think a lot of us underestimate the power of how we think about things,
yeah,
and the knock-on effect that has on our bodies and mm-hmm. how it responds. And, you know, there isn't enough discussion about the links of stress on the body.
Yeah.
And it's all of these, things together that culminate and create, you know, dis-ease within the body.
Yeah.
So you've given, I think, a lot of people, including myself, a lot of food for thought and the importance of actually looking after yourself in every way. But eat the bloody bar of chocolate and don't beat yourself up about it either.
I'm off to Centra now.
Come here, thanks a million.
Thank you so, so much. Like, and just from the get-go, it's just been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Likewise.
If you were moved by this conversation, please show your support for Alana if you can by donating to her GoFundMe page. You'll find the link in the show notes. This episode of Ready to Be Real Conversations was brought to you in partnership with HCC.ie and supported by Irish Life Health. HCC.ie's experts can help you find a health insurance plan that suits your needs and your budget.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.